If you've been listening to the Campfire podcast and would be willing to share your thoughts by answering a few questions, please let us know via the PharmaHealth website or by emailing the team at campfire.ncfh@wdhs.net. Listeners who provide their feedback will be eligible for reimbursement for their time. Welcome to Campfire, connecting primary producers. Campfire provides a solution-focused community for farmers to improve work systems and support mentally healthy workplaces.
A disease outbreak on a farm can be the worst possible nightmare for many producers. The impacts can go right to the core of the business and take a significant toll on the well-being of the farmer in the process. There are, though, steps that can be taken to minimise these impacts. G'day, I'm Drew Radford, and to discuss them, I'm joined by Dr. Chris Parker. Chris is a vet, and he's also First Assistant Secretary of the Biosecurity Animal Division and National Animal Disease Preparedness Coordinator. There's some big titles, but he's had other big ones as well, such as CEO of the Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicines Authority. It's roles like these that give him unique insight as to how animal disease outbreaks impact upon farmers. He joins us for this Campfire podcast. Chris, thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Chris, you've got a lot of titles and experience to your name, and you're a vet as well, but you've got a unique combination. You're also a farmer, I understand. Does that give you a particularly unique insight when it comes to biosecurity?
I think it gives you unique insight of agricultural production. You know, I farmed on a grain and wool property in South Australia for 11 years, and then now on a winery with cattle and sheep here in New South Wales. So I think it gives you a very practical understanding of biosecurity. It gives you a very practical understanding of the sorts of pressures that we all face running our businesses. And I think exotic diseases or even domestic diseases have an effect on us and have an effect on our livestock.
Well, it gives you very much a first-hand, realistic understanding of the impact of your bottom line.
Well, I think it does. And I think at times having that insight, I think, brings us closer to the people that we're meant to be protecting. And that's a really important component of the work I do and the work that my staff do.
Chris, it's been an unusual year in terms of biosecurity threats to Australia. We've seen a whole raft of things. The threat of foot and mouth disease from outside the country in the north, lumpy skin disease, Asian swine flu, and also Japanese encephalitis in livestock, and clearly animal disease is a major topic of conversation and a major concern. Can you just give us a bit of an overview how these things are biosecurity risks to Australian farmers?
Look, I think unusual is an understatement. It's been a particularly difficult year, I think, and a particularly challenging year for the farming sector, and certainly the biosecurity challenges that we have faced in the animal world with the movement of foot and mouth disease and lumpy skin disease close in Indonesia has been particularly concerning for Australian farmers, and I think that people are worried, as they should be worried. And certainly those threats being closer to us, it's probably the first time in a while where we've seen genuine pathways and a genuine chance of these diseases having an opportunity to arrive in Australia. But that's not to say that we haven't got and aren't working extremely hard to make sure that that isn't occurring. And of course then there's other diseases that have been around for a while, like the African swine fever. And we've certainly seen that around, not in Australia, of course, being an exotic disease, but it's in our near neighbours, in Papua New Guinea and also in East Timor. So these threats are coming closer, and we all need to be aware and we all need to be prepared for these.
Foot and mouth disease, to pick out one, I mean, ballpark figure, what would roughly be the cost to the Australian livestock sector if that did get on our shore?
Well, ABARES have estimated an $80 billion cost over 10 years. And I think that's an underestimate, to be honest with you. You know, we need to remember, although it's, you know, a little bit scary for people, but we need to remember if we were to get foot and mouth disease, our markets would close to animal products. And we export about 70% of the animal products we produce in this country. country. And the domestic market obviously would not be able to absorb that amount of meat or milk or any of the other animal products. So we are particularly concerned about something like foot and mouth disease, and that's why, you know, we've been working hand in glove with industry. And, you know, might I say it's been an absolute joy. I've been involved in agriculture for over 35 years in various forms, including as a farmer. And the way that industry and government and the state governments have worked together to ensure we're protecting Australian farmers from these threats has just been a real eye-opener and a real joy for me to be a part of.
That's a great and positive thing to hear, Chris. Are there any other examples of zoonotic diseases and biosecurity risks to Australian agriculture and therefore farmers' livelihoods?
I think probably two come to mind. One's more so in horses, which is, of course, the Hendra virus, which is a reservoir in bats, in flying foxes in particular. Probably not as relevant for Victoria farmers, but certainly what we've seen over the summer months last year and into this year was the spread of Japanese encephalitis virus, which is a virus that's actually reservoired in water birds and mosquitoes particularly, but can spread to pigs and horses and also humans. And that is a concern. And what we've seen, particularly with this very wet year and a half that we've had, is the spread of this disease further south. And we've seen cases in Victoria, New South Wales, into South Australia as well. And so, you know, these are a concern and we need to be aware. And they're certainly issues that we all need to face. And they're issues that we need to be aware of and informed about.
Chris, you and your colleagues have certainly been working hard to try and keep those things out of the country, but down at the production level, what are farmers themselves able to do to reduce the risk of contagious disease in their livestock and plants?
You know, one of the main things we can do is think about what our biosecurity plans on our farms look like. And we have a biosecurity plan on our farm. And I think these are really important things to do because we're in a world where we see increasing threats from biosecurity. Now, I know, having been a farmer before, we like to do things. And one of the things I think we can do in a very positive way on properties and our own properties is to ensure we've got an adequate biosecurity plan. And by that, I mean, it can be as simple as controlling and understanding who's coming on and off the property and making sure that we keep our livestock identification up to date. And those two simple things will go a long way to starting a pretty simple biosecurity plan. Now, there's a swag of resources around biosecurity plans, whether that be on the MLA website, Dairy Australia, the state government, the Ag Department there in Victoria would also have these resources available. And you can make them as complex or as simple as you like. But what I would do is have one, and if you've already got one, update it and make sure that you're doing everything you can to ensure that, along with the government doing its job at the border, you're doing your job at the farm gate. And I think that's a really important thing that producers can be doing in this space.
Chris, monitoring for disease and vaccination of stock are obviously a really key part of any farmer's livestock strategy. But should farmers be worried about being ostracised by their peers if they report an animal disease? Is that an invalid concern?
I can well understand that concern. You know, I lived in small communities. I do get, you know, people talk and all those sorts of things. But I'd flip it around and I would say, I think people would be a damn sight crankier with you if you delayed reporting and it had the opportunity to spread more broadly. And I think that, you know, we have compensation plans in place to provide compensation to those producers whose animals are destroyed or have to have something done to them within a disease situation. So the whole purpose of that is that there's hopefully not a financial disincentive not to report, if that makes any sense. And I think it's, again, important that where we see or suspect signs that are a bit unusual, and for things like foot and mouth disease, it might be lameness. That's a bit more, you know, a few more lame cattle or sheep than you might expect, or possibly even drooling is another one. Those sorts of things, where you see something unusual that you're not expecting to see, then call the vet. Call the local government vet if you want to, get them out to investigate it. And it's worth remembering that certainly under, you know, legislation, it is our responsibility as producers to report these cases where we think there might be a problem. Better to report it and be wrong than not to report it and risk it spreading more widely.
And I guess, Chris, that helps cut through confusion and rumours, really. Just act and contact the appropriate authority. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. And both your local vet and local authorities treat these things with discretion. You know, they come on and they look, and if they really believe there is a chance of it, there might be some requirements as far as moving on and off the property goes. But look, I'm quite happy to share. We had an increased level of lameness in our cattle. Now, I suspected it was just the wet year and it was probably just a foot issue, but got the local government vet out here in New South Wales. We farm just out of Canberra, and they came, took the samples, and of course it wasn't foot and mouth disease, and it didn't look like foot and mouth disease, but we still got the person out to check. And I think that that's a really important thing for people to do in this space. There is a 1800 number, which is 1-800-675-888. That's the emergency reporting line, and that is manned the whole time. And that's really important that, again, that number can be used by folk if they don't want to report directly to either their vet or the local government.
In your work as a vet, have you witnessed the mental health impacts of animal disease on farmers? And if so, what sort of impacts do they experience? And maybe from that, insight then to how they can be prepared to deal with it should it happen?
You know, I've had personal experience both as a farmer but also in practice in this space, and I think that there will be a whole range, depending on the situation, of feelings of grief and anger and frustration and those sorts of feelings, which are quite normal. The important thing here is to recognise that where we have those feelings, that we work through those feelings, that we talk to other people about this. Go and see your GP. If you don't think you want to see your GP, talk to a mate and think about what that might look like, or talk to a girlfriend, think what that might look like, and work your way through those issues. And if you really are struggling, then seek professional care in that space. But these sorts of issues can cause as much stress as any financial stress or any other stress in our life. And I think it's really important that people stay informed, get the best available science, and again, great resources around, whether that be through producer companies like Meat and Livestock Australia or Dairy Australia, or even government websites provide really good fact sheets on all these things, which can inform you and let you know what's happening. But again, I come back, before we'd even think about a disease, do something. And doing something is making sure you've got that biosecurity plan in place on your property, and that's a positive thing you can do to help protect yourself and put yourself in a better frame of mind.
As Dr. Chris Parker says, doing something is having a biosecurity plan in place. Perhaps one of the most important things they do is bring peace of mind. So what does that look like in practice? Dr. Catherine Robinson is a livestock vet who works in Western Victoria. She's also a farmer.
We farm prime lambs and cropping as well, with a few cows, but mostly cropping and prime lambs.
We're going to be talking about biosecurity plans. So the obvious question, I guess, is do you and your family have a biosecurity plan?
Yes, we do. I went through that, and then I made Dad and Beck, who works with us, know about it and read it as well.
I can imagine you want to try and lead by example on that one, Catherine.
Absolutely. And also it gives me a good idea what people are looking at and how to help them implement their biosecurity plans.
Well, in terms of what they are looking at, you're out on farms a lot of the time dealing with livestock and their owners every single work day, pretty much. Do most of the farmers that you work with have biosecurity plans in place?
I would dearly like to say yes, but in reality, there's a really wide range of biosecurity plans, ranging from people who sit down each year and go through meticulously and tick the box and think about what it means and implement the practices, to people that just tick the box and say, yes, I've got a biosecurity plan. It's over there in my pile of papers that I never look at again. And then there are some people that just don't have anything.
Does that make them view the issues involved a little bit differently?
I think so. I think the people that have a really good biosecurity plan, they're aware of different biosecurity risks. For example, introducing new sheep to the property, they'll say, right, oh, well, we've got a biosecurity plan. We know this is a quarantine area, for example, we know we'll drench them with this product and we'll keep them there for this amount of time, to the people that have ticked the box, they go, oh, quarantine new sheep, yep, I suppose I do that. They go in that paddock for a bit, or it might be that paddock. So I think the people that have really sat down and discussed with their vet or tried to understand what the biosecurity plan is have a much better understanding and implement the biosecurity a lot better.
Catherine, do you think having a biosecurity plan in place reduces a farmer's stress level?
Absolutely, I do. I think knowing where the risks are and then being able to manage the risk inherently means that they're a lot more comfortable that they're managing risks and comfortable with what's going on.
Catherine, as a local vet, I'd imagine you'd be one of the first people contacted in the event of a suspected disease outbreak. And sick animals add so much to a farmer's existing workload as it is, and I'd imagine they'd cause a lot of anxiety as well, for a range of reasons, not least of which would be the financial implications. Have you witnessed the mental health impacts of animal disease on farmers themselves?
Absolutely, I have. I think when in a disease outbreak or sick animals, inherently that farmer's having a bad day, then it's a lot worse than mine. So they've got a problem that they can't fix, so then they need outside help. So they're having a bad day, it's stressful. The whole aim of farming is, whether it's wool or meat or livestock production, is producing healthy animals and getting that animal to market or to grow wool or whatever it is. So when that animal's sick or there's a disease outbreak, things aren't going to plan and it's very stressful, as well as the economic implications. An example is with the stigma, and relatively recently there was a farmer from, it was a few hours from me, but they'd been tearing their hair out for years on end because they had itchy sheep. So everyone assumed it was lice, their neighbours assumed it was lice, they treated year in, year out, which is expensive and costly as well. So they treated each year and couldn't get rid of it. So then I came in and diagnosed the problem that it wasn't actually lice, and then gave them the tools to treat the problem, and then that resolved the issue. But there was a massive stigma because they were feeling bad because they've got lousy sheep. It was an economic cost of not only poor quality wool, but also the cost of different treatment options. And then the emotional stress of dealing with their neighbours saying, treat you lice for sheep, and all that sort of thing as well.
Catherine, what about vets? You know, what are the psychological impacts upon your industry? You're the ones that are called out to manage disease outbreaks and sometimes even cull livestock. How do vets protect themselves and prevent mental health risks from this type of work?
That's a really good question, and I think it's something that vets in general, and including myself, I don't have the perfect answer. I manage it as best I can by, I'm there to help solve a problem, and that my attributes is to go in there, diagnose the problem as best I can, and then come up with practical solutions on how to fix that problem. There's other aspects or influences going on there in there as well, which is the emotional impact on the farmer. So if a farmer, for example, I went to feedlot and his lambs were dying, very good feedlotter, been doing it for years, just as circumstances had meant three or four different things went wrong and he had quite a lot of deaths and dying animals. So devastating for him, but where I come in is diagnose the problem, said, right, this is what we've got to do. I couldn't stick around and implement the treatment, but I could help him sort it out so his neighbour could come and help and they could get it done. You can't take on the farmer's emotional impact, and I think that's really important, and the vet has to manage their time to realise that they can't be everywhere at once and they can't necessarily attend everything, but that's where there's colleagues that could help, phone, FaceTime, utilising different ways to get an outcome.
If you've been listening to the Campfire podcast and would be willing to share your thoughts by answering a few questions, please let us know via the Farmer Health website or by emailing the team at campfire.ncfh@wdhs.net. Listeners who provide their feedback will be eligible for reimbursement for their time. Thank you for listening to the Campfire podcast. For more information regarding Campfire, please visit the National Centre for Farmer Health website. All information is accurate at the time of release. This podcast was developed by the National Centre for Farmer Health and is funded by the Victorian State Government's WorkSafe, WorkWell Mental Health Improvement Fund.